Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy. Happy Wednesday morning. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. This is Action Movie Anatomy on Popcorn Talk, the online network talking movies, all things related to movies. I'm joined today by my excellently dressed, in a tie today, co-host, Mr. Andrew Guy.
Dylan.
You son of a bitch.
Make it easy on yourself, Dutch.
CIA got you pushing too many pencils, huh?
What's with this fucking tie business?
What is that?
What's up, guys? So happy to see you. So happy to be here. I love this movie. And we are joined by our good friend.
This is an aspiring writer, a talented graphics designer, a creative personality, and somebody who loves science fiction films, Mr. Jason Sparich.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Sure, you don't want to do like a silly accent?
You don't want to.
That was your chance.
My deep voice.
Okay, fair enough. You'll be the Bill Duke of the panel. We today, guys, are doing Predator. Now, Predator is one of my absolute favorite films in the history of movies. I mean, this is a movie that, like, it's one of those films that it comes back, I watch it again, and I can't quite believe it's as good that, like, on the 12th viewing and the 15th viewing. It's so incredible every time. It's like, it's one of these movies that just, it doesn't seem to age at all.
It hasn't aged at all. Like, this movie came out a year before we were both born. I know, yeah. Jason, it was out for a little while for you.
10 years old.
You could watch this movie, like, every couple months, and it would still be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I often do watch it every couple months.
I mean, the action's good, the acting is exactly what you want out of this movie, and the Predator's terrifying.
It's really extremely well done. Stan Winston is a genius.
Yeah,
a visionary of his time.
And thank God he came on, because before that, Arnold said that it looked like a, what did he say, like a...
Some weird, like, one-eyed cyborg-looking
right,
thing.
Right, with tentacles.
Yeah.
So when they changed it, he was like, thank God. And then they renamed the movie Predator from Hunter. So, this movie is
good choice.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a huge one. So I want to cue the trailer right now. It's an okay trailer. It's one of the interesting trailers. It's in that phase when they hadn't quite figured out how to make them dramatic.
Right.
It's where, like, the voice on all the trailers was, like, in a world dominated by such and such.
It's still kind of cheese. Rescue team.
Not assassins. Yes.
Assassins.
Every line he has in the movie is my favorite line.
I literally have, for favorite line, I have like 15 written down throughout the whole movie.
It's because later in films when Schwarzenegger like was in on the joke, I feel like.
Right.
And he already was in on the joke here, clearly.
Yeah.
But like a lot of movies play on that. They really like try to take advantage. And in this movie, most of what he says, he's not really in on the joke. He's like saying the lines in total seriousness.
Well, yeah. So that part during the village takeover when he like throws the knife and sticks the guy to the post, he's like, stick around.
That's improvised.
That's improvised.
Yeah.
That's what he thought that hero should say in that moment.
And that's, it's like, we're in such a different time now that this kind of movie, if a movie like this gets made now, it's like John Wick is sort of the example of a movie where it's like, kind of like this.
Right, but John Wick's much more serious.
Yeah.
But then Commando comes out, what?
The year before this.
The year before this, okay, and the whole movie is
the
just,
it's a cheesy
one-liner, so it's great that he still says him, but it's a little bit...
It's reeled in a little bit. Yeah, absolutely.
The trailer also shows, by the way, way too much of what happens
everything.
In the movie.
Yeah.
It shows Weathers dying. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
It shows Shane Black being dragged off. Hawkins.
Yep, right there. It's us. It kills for pleasure. And there's Bill Duke. He's about to die. Like, it's...
They show the one-armed Carl Weathers.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Like, this is... I mean, maybe this is the same thing as what happens in movies now when they think they're not going to be successful. They try to show you everything
cool.
But then that just ruins it. We can
kill it. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Is that a good line?
Yes.
The whole movie's good.
That was actually a cut from Conan right there.
Yeah.
the amount of shreddedness and jackness for this,
in this movie
is just phenomenal. Oh,
yeah. What's the funniest part is that, like, characters like Sonny Landham, who plays Billy, or like Jesse Ventura, Duke, the characters that are like less jacked than the rest of the cast, they like look like softies compared just because you have like Schwarzenegger and Weathers running around, just looking just super yoked.
But then when Billy drops his gun and takes off his shirt, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, well, you're also like, he's Jack, but he's no Schwarzenegger.
He's no Schwarzenegger. Yeah, no Weathers. No
Schwarzenegger. But then again, who is a Schwarzenegger? 8-time Mr. Olympia.
Nobody.
I mean, he lost 20 pounds to play the role. He got just leaned out.
Yeah, because they're like, you got to look like a lean commando, not just a bodybuilder.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Just a stud. Just an absolute stud. So let's get into this, guys. So the way we do this on the show is we like to engage you at first here. The very first thing we do is we are gonna share our thesis statement, our bold statement. So this is kind of a strong thought that we've all come up with that we really think sells the movie for us in some way. It's not opinion-based. It's not like, this is my favorite part of the movie. It's like, this is the greatest this, or this is the first time in history that this happened. And that is what this is about. So we are going to share our thesis statements right now. I'm going to start with our guest, Mr. Jason Sparich. Jason, what's your thesis statement?
My thesis statement is, I guess with late 70s from, let's say, 1980 on, this was the first alien bad guy on Earth. Now, you had Superman, E.T., Starman, who came to Earth, but they were cute and had elongated heads and necks and stuff. But everything else at this time was set in space or on an alien planet. So this is the first time there's a bad guy alien on Earth.
On Earth, hunting people.
I hadn't thought about that. I suppose that's true. Do you think that there's like any kind of obscure or rare sci-fi movie that we don't know about?
So I went back and I was looking at the late 70s and then the 80s until this movie, and there's nothing.
Okay.
We could call it blockbusters.
Right. You know? And like, I guess I could also, you know, put on there that let's exclude like an invasion or a group. So Superman 2...
Sure.
Had, you know, Zod and but that's a group and
there's humanoids.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well,
yep. But they're aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of your thesis statement, I did forget to mention we have these loose rules we use to define the films. And one of the rules, there's five of them that are kind of loose, is that the films we are talking about on this show were made in 1981 or later. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things you're referencing pre-81 are sort of less relevant to what we're talking about here.
So
but especially 81 forward, I think you're absolutely right. You're dead on with that. Rule number two would be that the hero always plays by his own rules.
Definitely plays by his own rules.
Yeah, of course. Rule number three. Three is that the movie is driven by a police, military, or political figure. Rule number four is that the hero and the villain are always the smartest people or figures or whatever in the room.
Predator is definitely the smartest.
Just very smart. Yeah. Rule number five is that there's at least one explosion. So we used to stick to these rules really carefully. They're not as important to us quite as much anymore.
This hits it on the
head. Yeah, we start to find out that even though we kind of have regressed from the rules being as important, almost every movie we do still falls perfectly in line.
Well, there was a solid 25 or 30 movies that came to mind when we wanted to make this show happen. Right. And we tried to look at the similarities between those 30 movies or so. It was probably more like 50. Mm-hmm. And most of them hit all the rules on the head. And I know that this is one of the first ones that came to mind for us. So, yeah, this is dead on, of course. This is an action classic. Anyway, moving on. What is your thesis statement, Drew?
So, it's interesting because this is a franchise movie and there's been like five installments of it. But for me, this is the biggest missed success for a franchise ever.
In sequels, I mean.
In sequels, everything. Yeah, I mean, you got Alien vs. Predator, you got Predator 2, all these movies, they suck.
You mean in terms of quality, not in terms of money-making.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Predators wasn't that bad, right? The Predators, you
remember that? This was all
right. You're right. It wasn't at the
but
caliber.
Even in money-making, this movie still made the most money adjusted.
Yeah, box
office
total.
The only one that made more was Alien vs. Predator, and that's 20 years later.
And not particularly
and
good.
Not good. No. This movie was the most successful of the franchise, which is surprising to me, and Arnold probably didn't want to do another one, or he was too busy, or whatever it was. This movie and this franchise was they just missed. Like, it could have been so much more.
Completely.
Like, if he came back 3 years later and did Predator 2, he's already the best. That's why they bring him in for number one. Then he's the best that's already killed a predator.
Right.
Bring him back.
They should have. Absolutely. It is the big... I mean, to your point, it's the greatest missed sequel opportunity for quality in the history of action films.
Absolutely.
And I would agree that's dead on.
Yeah.
That's completely dead on.
It's amazing that Danny Glover was cast, but it worked for a sequel at that time, I guess.
Well, there was a couple things going on, right? As we said, we were assuming, we don't know the details, but we were assuming that Schwarzenegger didn't do the second film for whatever reason, because he was doing other things.
His career was blowing up.
Yeah. I mean, he was the biggest star on the planet, and they had just seen the success of Danny Glover and Gary Busey together in Lethal Weapon 1 just a few years prior. So I'm sure they were like, we'll just throw these two guys in the movie together. Busey, Glover.
Right.
Yeah. These are big names. They're action names. People want to see these guys on screen again. Busey was great in Lethal Weapon 1. Yeah.
And this goes with a comment that someone said. He said, would you guys like for them to make a reboot or another sequel?
Well, they're going
it's
to.
On our live
yeah,
stream.
Shane
they
Black
are.
Might yeah. be making yeah. it, right?
Shane Black, who plays Hawkins in this movie,
yeah.
is making another one. God, I hope it's as good as this.
But it's not a reboot, right? It's there's supposed
to. I don't think so. Yeah, I think it's yeah. I think it's more of a sequel.
Yeah,
I think. But the thing about that movie was that it was last year. There was a Deadline or a Variety article that announced it, but nothing much has happened in terms of production since. And Black is, for those of you who don't know who Shane Black is, we'll get to him in just a second. Though actually, maybe we won't because he didn't write it. So Shane Black is the guy that wrote Lethal Weapon 1. That was his big credit originally, was that he got paid a bunch of money. And then later on, he went on to write a bunch of famous movies. He ended up directing Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, writing and directing Iron Man 3.
During filming this, he was writing Last Boy Scout, right?
Yeah. So he's a big Joel Silver guy that he worked with. And he, you know, the fact that he plays Hawkins, who is the funny character with the glasses who makes the pussy jokes.
Right. It's perfect because in his scripts, he constantly has these things that people refer to as Shane Blackisms.
Yeah.
That are kind of like that bro-ish, kind of douchey thing. But
yeah.
it paints a picture in your head of exactly what you're thinking about. Or
exactly.
what he's thinking about.
So that's pretty funny. But he is apparently going to write and direct the newest installment of the Predator franchise. And I think I have faith in Shane Black. He's fantastic. He should be able to do a good job with it.
Absolutely.
Because I believe, was it Robert Rodriguez who did Predators? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it was fine.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. It wasn't
exactly.
bad. It was fine.
It wasn't something like this where you can talk about it almost 30 years later and you're just like, God, this movie's so
blown away.
It was just campy.
It was
campy. And I don't know what you're doing casting Adrian Brody as the lead in your movie.
Like, I know.
I mean, it's a cool idea. He was
like
doing
so his career was in a good place
yeah.
at that time. Ben.
Okay, Predator is a slasher film masquerading in an action movie's body. That is like, and I think by default is one of the five most intelligent action movies ever made. For that, it's the perfect amount of suspense. You don't really realize it when you think about it in retrospect that this is in fact actually just a slasher film. But the way that each character is picked off one by one, you don't see the bad guy for quite a bit of the movie.
Yeah.
There's one character that leads it that seems to kind of know what's going on more than anyone else. And, you know, as most of these slasher movies end up, except for the really grim ones, one or two people survive,
right.
and everyone else dies. And there's an epic confrontation at the end, and that's exactly what happens in this film.
I can't imagine how scary this movie was when it came out.
Like, terrifying.
Yeah, it must have been absolutely terrifying.
Oh, I saw it in the theaters. I was 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I saw Aliens, which was probably still to this day my favorite movie of all time.
It's the previous year,
the year
right? 86.
Before,
yeah.
And I was blown away. So then when I saw this, it for 10 years old, I mean, 9 years old, Aliens was crazy. And then this at 10 was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw this movie for the first time when I was about 10 years old. I was camping with a buddy. We were in the RV, his parents' RV,
yeah.
and his dad was watching Predator, one of his favorite movies of all time.
Yep.
Which I know that you're...
It's one of my dad's favorite movies of
absolutely.
All time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I remember when it showed him ripping out Billy's spine
yeah,
as a kid, and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is terrifying.
Yep.
You see the tentacles come out of the water, and then
yeah.
finally at the end, with that kind of like mini montage of Arnold getting prepped
yeah.
and the Predator getting prepped, you
yeah.
see his skin and his body, and you're
uh-huh.
like, oh, God, he's just creepy. Even now, he's still creepy.
I remember one of my childhood, my older brother's 9 years older than me, and I remember his good buddy had a Predator mask. Like a full size, like rubber one that he had bought for Halloween one year that was like on his wall. And he always had, and we'd go over for dinner sometimes and I'd like look in his room and it was like, he was like pretty gothic. There was like skulls and stuff.
Right.
And I always would see the Predator mask. And like as a little kid, I mean, I describe it as gigantic. It was probably like this big because
right.
I was like five or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do remember, you know, my dad is like, he always would talk about this movie as like, oh yeah, Predator's a great film. And like, it's funny because we do the thing critically where
right.
we talk about movies we like and then we degrade them a little bit because they're not quality. But as we've gotten older, I feel like we're more willing to accept these movies that sort of we don't want to give the quality rating to as actually great. Like
yeah.
in my teenage years, I would have probably watched this and been like, well, it's ridiculous and silly, but it's really entertaining. Whereas
yeah.
like now I watch this movie and I'm like, no, it's actually just really good.
Well, yeah, because it's aged so long and you go back and you look at it as now as we're almost 30 years old and you
yeah.
watch that and you're like, wow, this is still a good movie.
And with the Cold War going on in the 80s and, you know, like Platoon and these
yeah.
jungle movies also like at the same time, I thought it was amazing that they're like, look, if you're American or whatever, like this is like warfare in the jungle, but now it's an alien who,
yeah.
you know, it's completely,
right.
completely like different enemy that, you know, you had to face and maybe this could happen, you know?
Right.
I mean,
the part of this movie that when I watched it again recently that really kind of blew my mind was... you know, we all know the thing you and I did, the Dylan, you son of a bitch. You know, that's one of the funniest parts of the movie. It's classic. It's action movie lore. And
absolutely.
It's great. But it starts there, and they all got out of the helicopter, and then they're in the helicopter, and Little Richard is playing. And it's real fun, and you're getting the introduction to all the characters. You know, Mac is shaving with that. He's shaving. Yeah.
Even though the helicopters are like this the whole time, he's just shaving.
Like, he's shaving. Just,
wow.
Jesse Ventura's chewing.
Carl, shitload of tobacco.
Yeah, Carl Weathers is like, Dylan is like, he's like, 1976, me and Dutch each got one of these. Like, no one's impressed.
Right.
Like, everybody's kind of doing their thing. You know, Hawkins is telling jokes. Billy's real serious. They're setting the stage, and it's real fun. And then this amazing thing happens, and I didn't remember this until, like, the last time I watched it, where they cut the music. And the red light starts flashing, and Schwarzenegger like puts his hand up, and it's like radio silence, and no one's talking. And it just, you look down for a second, and you see it's the jungle, and these guys are about to jump out of a helicopter into the jungle in the middle of the night in dead silence with no backup. And you're like, as silly as this is, that's a terrifying thought.
Absolutely.
And these guys are just ready, like they're actually badasses. And it was effective, I thought, enough to the point that I was like, man, if this was a drama or a war movie, it would have the same effect on me if it was done the same way.
Absolutely.
Even though this is kind of a cheeseball action movie.
They just use green instead of red now, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty amazing. So before we get into Star Profiles, I do want to share our fist pump moment. And fist pump moment for you guys that are watching, if you want to get in on this with us, you can tweet at us, leave it in the comments. This is the kind of that moment where you're watching and you're at home and maybe you're by yourself, maybe you've had a glass of wine, I don't know, whatever. You're looking around, something awesome happens, and you're like, are you seeing this right now? Is anyone seeing what's happening?
Right.
Like, it's like the fist pump, like it's kind of like an FBI moment.
Definitely an FBI moment.
Yeah.
Fist yeah.
Yeah, fist yeah. And that's kind of what we do here. And it can be anything. It can be an awesome explosion. It can be a one-liner. It can just be like it can be the credits. It can be the first time you see a character, the sound someone makes, the look one character gives another. Something that you just are like, yes, I fucking love this. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So did you guys prepare your fist pump moments?
Absolutely we did.
I've got two.
Okay, please share them.
The first was the first laser to brain explosion when Mac gets it.
Oh.
You saw the Predator kind of shoot, I think, a couple times, but
yeah,
you never saw
Hawkins.
The three dots.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what the heck? And then, boom, like, the camera's behind him, brain blows up.
Yeah.
And it's blood all on the camera. I was like, that is just, that's a great way to start.
Oddly enough,
I love
though.
That moment, yeah. But when we were watching it the other day, I noticed that, okay, so you get the three dots on the arm, travels up to his head, and then you get the camera behind his... Just like huge, and then you see him laying on the ground later. And it looks like he probably got like shot with a .22
in
it.
Yeah, I did notice that also when
weather season.
Weather season, and it's kind of
But still, absolutely awesome because it is the classic try.
Yeah,
my second one I think will be the same as yours, but mine will be added to it. So why don't you guys go next?
Okay, so I have two as well. I'll do my other one because I feel like the one where. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So the first one is it's the beginning. It's when they're all getting out of
the establishing shot.
Yeah, the establishing shot.
So sweet.
Everybody. Yeah. You get Ventura. You get Billy. You get all the guys
coming off the
helicopter. Shave. Yeah, the very first time they do. And then there's just Arnold sitting in the back, lean as ever, sucking on his
cigar. Yeah.
And then he like throws his bag out and jumps out. You're just like, look at this team of badasses. It's like that moment in MacGruber where he like talks about all the guys, this like perfect team of killer stoppers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's them. They are the perfect team.
Oh, and I love how like they the way they outfit each character. It's like Bill Duke has on like the suit.
Yeah.
And Billy's in the tracksuit. And like Jesse Ventura is like the high waisted jeans with the sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And like Schwarzenegger's in like the fucking super tight red polo.
Yeah.
It's just great.
The aviators and the cigar.
That's like one of the things about this movie that I remember the very most is that shot. It's just excellent.
You're like, I want to see these guys do anything.
Yeah.
I'm so ready for the next hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, the whole, it's just a team of badasses.
Yeah.
So
killer
yeah.
stoppers.
Killer stoppers. And then they walk in and the general's like, it's been a long time, Dutch. He's like, he goes, you look good, Dutch. And he goes, it's been a long time, General.
Like, General. Yeah.
Every line that he says
it's
is my favorite line.
Classic, yeah.
So I think my favorite, I had a couple. I mean, I have a ton of fist bump moments in this movie. But the one when I was watching it again yesterday that stuck out to me was, it's like the whole sequence where he's getting like covered in mud and ready to fight the Predator. So he covers himself in mud and he lights the torch.
It's almost a montage, but not a cheesy montage.
Yeah, it's not.
They didn't do it.
They didn't do it with heavy music and like quick cuts. It's like
so
slower
well
cuts.
Because you're totally ready. So I love, first of all, I love when he does the mud and then he the torch. He's
Yeah.
That I love. But the one that I actually found myself even more like, yes, and this is little, but It's when he's got the spear with the knife on it, yeah. And he's like weaving through the jungle with the spear and the knife, and there's like the upper shot and then the left shot, yeah. And I was like, yes, Schwarzenegger, he's hunting. Like, yeah, yeah.
There's like an angry old man walk going on.
Well, and also because he's got the mud and his eyes, they look super white, and crazy.
Yeah.
I just love it.
So my second one was on the yeah. roar. It cuts to the predator going, yeah. like, what the?
Yeah.
Right. He's coming, and then so he heats up.
Yeah.
His claws. And that, I think, was more my fist pump than even Arnold doing it, just because yeah. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. The Predator's yeah. just like, okay, yeah. I think yeah, I'm going to get ready for this guy.
This yeah. whole, like, progression of the scene is like, you realize that the Predator is like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in for it. This is battle. This is warfare. Before, it's like shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
He is literally, there's no competition. Like, no. He gets shot a little bit, but that's because they unload like over 10,000 rounds,
80 rounds
blankly.
80 rounds of the minigun.
Yeah, no, he's like 200 rounds of the minigun. Yeah. I watched a video of my friend shooting a minigun the other day, by the way. 200 rounds in a minigun, it's like that. It's gone. Yeah. It cost him $100. It lasted for less than 5 seconds.
Yeah, the ammunition that he'd have to carry.
To be able to run the gun as long as he was.
Yeah.
I always remember as a kid that one of the things that's like just blazed into my memory is the sound of the minigun whirring after yeah. he runs
yeah.
out.
Yeah. And he's just and sitting there smoke. Holding, he's like yeah. sweating. They actually had to slow down the shooting of that yeah. minigun because they wanted to be able to catch the barrels moving on camera because
yeah.
it's too fast otherwise.
I just love he sees Blaine get shot. He's like, Jaja! I don't even know what he says. He just starts unloading. That's incredible. Alright, let's get into star profiles. I want to talk about a little bit of where the stars of this film were when their career was made. So I think it's pretty clear that these two guys, Schwarzenegger and Weathers, are the stars of the film.
Straight up.
They're the big names. You have Apollo Creed and you have the Terminator. And basically, Schwarzenegger had actually had three... I mean, I'm not going to call them unsuccessful or bad, because they weren't. Raw Deal, Commando, and Red Sonja, they're all relevant films, but none of them are relevant like some of his bigger hits were.
Right, right.
Commando, I guess, of the three of them, is the one that you would point to.
Definitely.
But Commando's a very silly movie. It made money, and people saw it, but it's super funny.
Yeah.
Red Sonja is the third film in the Conan franchise about the title character Red Sonja. Not a good movie at all.
That's the one that made him just like, I'm done with that franchise.
Yeah.
They moved that movie to PG-13, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. That was his big complaint.
And then Raw Deal is fine, but like...
That was the Russian... He was the Russian...
No, like, that's Red Heat.
Red Heat. Sorry.
Exactly. Red Heat, Raw Deal. These are the 80s Schwarzenegger movies that just get kind of lost. So, yeah, I mean, not particularly good. It's just like a Schwarzenegger, like... I think it's like a revenge movie. I can't quite remember, but... Predator is so much better than those movies. And you jump back, and 84 is Terminator 1, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It...
Year before.
Yeah, so his three hits before this, or three movies, I guess. Like, that's just what Schwarzenegger was doing. He was establishing himself as the biggest action star in the world at the time.
It's crazy how much better his accent got over the 3 years. From Terminator 1
yeah.
to this.
Well, his accent in this is perfect.
I'm a robot.
It's perfect. It's the best version of the Schwarzenegger accent to me because it's just... It's, like, crisp, but it's not perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's confident in his delivery.
That's exactly what it is. He's confident in his delivery, but it's not good. That's, like, one of my favorite lines in the whole movie is when like, you know, he gives his first line. He's been a long time, General. And then, like, he, you know, his introduction, the guy's like, we need to get this cabinet minister. And he's like... This cabinet minister, does he always travel on the wrong side of the water? It's just like the way that he says his lines, it's just amazing. The confidence behind them is what makes it so incredible.
Absolutely.
So, all right, so then you look at Weathers, and we all know Weathers as Apollo Creed, and rightfully so. 85, he did Rocky IV. 82, he did Rocky III. And then 81, he did Death Hunt, which is a Charles Bronson, Lee Marvin movie.
Right.
It's like, I want to say it's a Western or something like that.
He had basically done nothing other than TV movies and TV series and films that he didn't really care about, and then it was just Rocky franchise.
Yeah, so
like
his
what made him,
but then he just died in Rocky IV. So
he has three relevant characters in his career, and that is Dylan, that is Chubbs,
and Creed,
Action Jackson,
yeah, and
yeah,
Action Jackson,
yeah, that's
yeah,
true.
But that was a flop.
That was flop.
It was
pretty bad.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty interesting. I mean, their interplay between these two characters is really wonderful. Like Schwarzenegger, obviously, is the star of the film, and he's
right.
the most memorable badass. But Weathers definitely has some great moments, and when you think about
yeah.
I mean, obviously, they're Dylan, you son of a bitch. That's like one of the iconic moments in Schwarzenegger lore. Mm-hmm. But then you also have all the moments of where, like, in the jungle, like, his character's being exposed as being a slime ball.
Yeah.
Like, I love when Schwarzenegger's like, heatseekers, you hear that, Dylan? That's pretty sophisticated for some half-ass mountain boys.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, they're getting better prepared every day, Dutch.
Like, yeah. Well, it's like, it's funny because when I watched this movie when I was 10, and I only watched it, like, maybe two more times up until recently for the show.
Yeah.
And just you and I drinking wine and being like, we should turn on Predator.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. That happens.
A reason that I actually own this movie, like a digital copy, because we just bought it like several months ago.
I totally forgot that Carl Weathers is like the bad guy in this movie.
Yeah.
He's like, he's the schmuck. He's the conniving, like...
Who redeems himself.
He redeems himself. That's such a style, Dylan. Yeah. Picked up some bad habits from you.
Yeah.
Love them both.
Love them.
Yeah. Anyway, we can kind of get into production development. Who made the movie? Who's behind it? Pretty big production team. I mean, this is one of, you know, Joel Silver's a legend, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, The Matrix. Die
I love
Hard,
that one of his very first movies was Xanadu.
Yeah,
which
one of the biggest flops ever.
Well, yeah, well, it's a romance musical sci-fi. And the only reason I've even seen this movie is because the show How Did This Get Made?
Yeah,
the podcast.
Yep.
Covered it, and I went to go see it live, so I had to watch this movie. Thank God I was drinking.
Yeah.
Because that movie was so hard to watch. It's so bad.
Yep.
But it's so bad that it's good.
It's one of the classics.
And it's hilarious to think that this guy, Joel Silver, who is definitely one of the greatest action movie producers of all time.
Of all time.
You got the Matrix series, you got Die Hard, you've got V for Vendetta,
the Lethal Weapon franchise, Predator. Yeah. I mean,
it's endless.
Amazing.
He hasn't been as prolific the last 15 years. I mean, he's made a lot of movies, but they haven't been very good.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to be... I mean, V for Vendetta is one of those movies that will stick around for a very long time, and then the Matrix ones, but that was a little before that. Yeah.
80s, 90s, that was his bread and butter.
Yeah,
and
then he was killing it.
Mid-2000s, early 2000s, he was decent, but by the mid-2000s, 05, 06, he was starting to really fall off. The last decade has not been super kind to Joel Silver in terms of a quality standpoint.
Honestly, the last decade for everyone that produced this movie, or that was in the production development of this movie, the writers, the director, everything.
I mean, the writers just stuck with the franchise. Like,
well, yeah. Well,
Two,
they,
and then Alien, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, all the Alien movies.
Yeah.
They're brothers, Jim and John.
Yeah. They haven't written anything relevant for 15 years or 12 years. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Gordon and John Davis, they're the other major producers on this, and they're guys that have worked with Silver over the years. You know, Lawrence Gordon worked on Die Hard with him. He worked on Boogie Nights. He did Watchmen, which was pretty successful. John Davis.
Boogie Nights.
iRobot. He did the entire Dr. Dolittle franchise, Waterworld. And he just actually, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which comes out this weekend, I believe, is also, that's John Davis' production.
Interesting.
We should do Dr. Dolittle on this show.
It's probably qualifies as a category.
It's definitely one explosion.
Oh, yeah.
Of laughter. All right, I'm done. Let's just keep moving on.
Whatever. Like, these are action movie producers. These were heavy hitters in the 80s and 90s. Silver is kind of like one of these guys we talk about, like Bruckheimer, where he was so successful that after that first run of Lethal Weapon and Predator and the movies that he was making in the mid-80s, he worked with a lot of the same producers, very much like we said last week on Con Air, where anytime that Bruckheimer would work on a film, he'd have his sort of rotating cast of creative people and producers that he would just bring into the project. And if you look at all their filmographies, their biggest credits are almost always Bruckheimer movies. And for the most part, it's the same with these other producers. A lot of their biggest hits were Joel Silver movies.
Yeah.
So
for him, it's like all Joel Silver's got going on now is the Sherlock franchise, which is great.
Yeah.
I actually really like that franchise.
It's made money.
But it is. It's very interesting to see how much these guys found a niche in that perfect 80s to 90s.
Yeah.
You know? Filmmaking.
Yeah, now Jim and John Thomas, the brothers, the writers, they're great because they continue to get paid money based on writing credits for the Predator franchise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone that gets made.
Yeah, just characters. Yeah.
Yeah, credited as a character writers. But aside from that, I mean, this was the movie that launched their career.
Yeah.
They had a few credits before this, but this is the big one. And then
this was the first movie they ever wrote.
This was the first one.
There's
no TV
one.
Credits. There's a small set after this.
Well, film. I don't know, but I don't think there was anything before this. This was also Shane Black and Ventura's debut
acting
in acting.
Yeah,
and this is the first movie they wrote. And then they went on to do things like Wild Wild West and Behind Enemy Lines. Which,
yeah.
When I was a kid, Behind Enemy Lines was entertaining.
There is a certain amount of I think excuse that you can sort of. You know, it's like you want to believe that a writer is going to have this stretch of great films. But when you deal with, like, big-budget action movies, you have to sort of just, like, tip your hat to the writer. Like, go get that money, man. Because at the end of the day, you write your script and you sell it, and the movie gets made, and you probably lose complete creative control.
Yeah,
they butcher it, they edit it, they cast who they want to cast. And if the movie turns out to be good, great. If the movie turns out to be bad...
This will be your career, where you just get paid residuals for your characters.
So those movies you talked about, Last Boy Scout, Behind Enemy Lines, Wild Wild West...
Yeah.
These are movies where you're like, way
Last
to go.
Last Boy Scout was Shane Black, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, way to go. Way to get paid to write these big budget movies.
I think the production cost on Wild Wild West was outrageous.
Well, that movie was massive. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was like... But that was also like the second to last thing, or third to last thing, that people were like, oh, we'll give you a chance.
What was the movie that we talked about? Was it Air Force... What was the movie we talked about where it was like It was like such and such didn't want to do the film because they're like and the producer insisted that there was gonna there had to be like a giant mechanical spider
and then he made
years
Wild
later
Wild
it appeared
West.
In Wild Wild West.
Yes.
I can't remember which one it is either,
but yeah, I know exactly.
But Joel
what
Silver
about.
Insisted, and then he ended up putting the giant mechanical spider in Wild Wild West,
which was incredible,
amazing.
Oh, I hate
absolutely
that movie.
Incredibly bad.
Yeah, but it has a great soundtrack,
and then you get into McTiernan.
Yeah,
you know.
So this is a really interesting one, right, John McTiernan?
Yeah, I mean, like, this guy was a guy that you thought, based off what he did with, like, Die Hard and, obviously, Predator, you thought this guy, you know, Hunt for Red October.
Seemed like he was going to own the action great. World. I mean, yeah. that three right there you just named.
Yeah, those are all classics.
Incredible stories.
Yeah. And the most recent success that he had was the Thomas Crown Affair, which I love, the remake of that.
It's like, 99?
Yeah, 99. And yeah.
With Pierce Brosnan?
Brosnan.
Yeah.
Brosnan. Yeah.
The end of that movie is awesome.
I've never
seen
it.
A little heist. Oh, it's great. But yeah, you thought this guy was going to be great, and then he just completely fell off after this. You know?
Mind Psycho?
Predator, Die Hard, Hunt for Red October are great, but then he did The Medicine Man. He got a lush, you know, that was not a good movie. Very bad reviews. Same with Last Action Hero. Some referred to Last Action Hero as a 2-hour long Saturday Night Live skit.
It's pretty silly. It's I had a band bad. In high school called Last Action Hero, just for the
also
record.
Also pretty silly.
Yeah.
Didn't do well either.
And it was an unsuccessful commercial endeavor.
and then he kind of like, he redeemed himself with Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Great
It was
movie.
Like, great it's great. 95. We will do that on the show Sunday. I love that movie.
It's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's still incredibly watchable.
So McTiernan has the particularly hilarious piece. I mean, not hilarious. He went to prison. Yeah. He has the particularly odd piece of trivia where he hired a PI to investigate a former co-producer.
On Rollerball.
The film Rollerball.
Yeah.
Was caught, lied to the FBI, and ended up in prison. I think just got out this last year.
He lost everything.
Yeah.
Literally everything. Bankrupt, lost ranch, everything.
I mean, for the record, guys, we sometimes will reach out for interviews, comments, and guest booking to various agencies and publicists. When we were looking up McTiernan's information, it was very difficult to find a contact.
Yeah.
We found an attorney contact was the only contact
we were like,
find.
Wait, why is he... Is there only an attorney? That seems very odd.
And so why was he finding information about that movie?
It doesn't really say.
Yeah, it's... Because the thing I was going to say was this. The comment about the attorney doesn't suggest that he doesn't have a publicist or an agent.
Right,
yeah,
right.
I mean,
It's the only thing you could find.
Yeah, it's more about, like, it seems like it's harder to get information on the guy. He seems to be less interested in being contacted, or it's not easily available. So it's kind of interesting. It's a bit sad because, I mean, when you think about those movies, like Die Hard and Predator are two of the 10 greatest action films ever made.
Yeah.
Hunt for Red October, if you call that an action movie, is easily in the top 25.
Well, it started that franchise, didn't it?
Yeah, the Jack Ryan franchise.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And they've really kind of...
Yeah,
they're very successful.
But they're not that good.
Yeah. I haven't seen the most recent one.
The Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit?
Yeah,
Chris
Pine.
I missed it.
But yeah, I mean, he was wiretapping two producers, essentially, so you would think it would maybe be for, like, creative ideas.
Yeah.
Or, like,
something.
But yeah, anyway, we don't want to harp on the guy. You know, we wish you the best. And maybe you'll come back and make another movie someday, since his last credit was 2003.
I hope you come back and make another sweet movie.
Right?
I love John McTiernan.
Like, do another Die Hard with a Vengeance, like, redemption. Yeah. That would be incredible.
Come on the show for Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Just come on the show.
Please.
We're calling your lawyer.
Do it.
That's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. We can probably move on. I mean, the movie was filmed in Jalisco, Mexico. You know, there's
yeah.
not... It's, as far as, like, how the explosions were done, all that kind of stuff. I mean...
There's an hour-long documentary out there. We watched it, and we wanted to talk about it more, but honestly, that's not why you guys watch the show. You don't want us to just
regurgitate
facts that we've seen and read about. So if you want to know, check it out. It's really cool. Jean-Claude Van Damme was originally...
Supposed to play the Predator.
Yeah, but then they were like, you're too small, and then they had him in for just some special effects stuff that was uncredited, and he was like, I want nothing to do with this.
Yeah, he
just scrapped it.
Yeah, I mean, the film, if you are interested, you can find it. It's an hour-long documentary, and it's called If It Bleeds, We Can Kill It, The Making of Predator. It was made in 2001. It's got interviews with Bill Duke, Carl Weathers, McTiernan.
I actually think it's called If It Bleeds, We Can Kill It.
If It Bleeds, We Can Kill It.
I just imagine Jean-Claude on a branch, like, holding him, because he's... How tall is Jean-Claude?
Like 5'9", right? Something like that. Yeah.
Saw him the other day, right?
Yeah, we ran into him like a couple weeks ago.
Just a gem of a man.
He was a sweetheart.
Yep. Okay, so.
So
actually, you know, one more thing about the production.
About Jean-Claude and running into
it. Yeah. we talked about this, the filming. So it was in Mexico.
Yeah.
During the day, you can tell. Like, these dudes are sweating. They're just dying. At night, when they're filming, anytime you see a scene that's in the dark, It's in sub-zero temperatures.
Yeah.
They're freezing.
Yep.
And then Arnold, he's got this pottery clay on him that's mud. they would try to, like, keep him warm, but then the clay would just harden.
Yeah.
And fall off. He was shivering so much during filming. He was so cold that he was like, what can I do? What can I do? So he decides to start drinking peach schnapps. He's like, nice. Oh, that'll warm me
up.
What a manly
bring the body temperature down even more.
Yeah. So instead, he just got wasted on set.
Just got drunk.
He just couldn't do it. So he just had to freeze through the whole thing. Anyway, that's a fun little trivia fact.
Yeah. Another one of the ones I liked was that this film was going on and shooting like directly before him getting married, and he missed the final rehearsal for his wedding with Maria Shriver because he was more focused on the film. She was not happy about that.
Yeah, she'd come on set to make wedding plans with him, and the crew in Mexico thought it was hilarious to put frogs in their shower.
Oh yeah,
scared the shit out of her.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thus begins the. Beautiful marriage.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So let's talk a little bit about critical and box office. We can mention the fact that this movie was only made for $15 million.
Right? Wow.
That's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, even though it is 87, you think about how much that was back then, that's not even close to what mass, like $500 million movies that are made now.
They paid Stan Winston $1.5 million to make The Predator.
Which was worth every penny.
Yeah, it's 10% of the budget of this film went to Stan Winston, who is the famous effects designer who made The Terminator.
Yep.
And he was recommended to do this film through Schwarzenegger because of their work together. They stayed close friends. So Winston came in and designed, because as we said, the original Predator...
It was a joke.
Yeah, the studio kind of shipped it out, and it was this like weird... Because it was based on, Joel Silver had this idea for like a Rastafarian hunter.
Yeah.
That's where you get like the dreadlocks.
Which is cool.
Very cool. And there was drawings and tentacles, and it came out and it looked kind of like a weird combination of a cyborg with like one red eye in the middle of its head. It just wasn't intimidating or cool at all.
Yeah, Arnold just said it was a joke.
Yeah.
Like it was not... Yeah, like you said, it's not intimidating at all. No one would have watched this movie.
Yeah.
This movie would not be what it was if the Predator wasn't a badass.
So they ended up paying Stan Winston to make this, to design this thing. It's done with practical effects almost entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And it is played by the 7'2" actor who was also the actor that played Harry and the Hendersons, Harry.
Yeah, and also he's the black pilot at the end of the movie.
Helicopter pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah, his name is...
Kevin Peter Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall.
He's the helicopter pilot at the end of the movie?
Very end of the movie.
The
one who's like, what the...
When yeah.
standing there.
Yeah. Which is great. Like, that's such a cool thing. It's like, you just killed a predator... Here he is.
Yeah.
In human form, you know.
That's pretty cool.
That guy's 7'2".
Yeah, gigantic.
Massive.
You know, what's really amazing is in that documentary, you see a lot of clips of him with the suit on, just like on set, dancing around. And it was like, he wasn't just a guy who was big. He wasn't like a big, because he's 7'2", is obviously huge.
Massive.
Not just a giant guy that puts on the suit. It was the way that he moved.
Right.
He had this graceful movement.
Yeah, yeah,
and he'd
absolutely.
Slink around. And it was terrifying. I mean, just like a really...
Did you hear that? Because you know how when the predator gets out of the netting and he's like monkeying around in the trees and camouflage. Did you hear that they originally tried to put a monkey in a suit?
No.
Yeah. They actually tried to put a monkey in a, and it was actually a red suit at the time so that they could you know go in post production and add in the predator
and CGI
to make it look like he was crawling around the trees. The monkey would just take off the suit all the time. It wouldn't jump around. They're like, fuck this.
Throw feces at the PAs.
Exactly. That's kind of a cool idea.
It would
have
been cool. Schwarzenegger just wasted drinking peach schnapps and kick monkey. Out of the monkey. Sounds like a great set to work
great
on.
Monkey.
Absolutely.
I mean, apparently the whole set is like this. The production behind this was a disaster. As you mentioned with the temperature, there was locusts.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I mean, all kinds of leeches.
Yeah, locusts, leeches, just incredibly humid. It was miserable.
Horrible.
You know, our friend Haggerty, who was on the show, the very first episode, Air Force One, was talking to us about filming...
Jurassic World
in Hawaii, and it was just miserable.
Yeah.
Another guy that worked on the film showed us pictures of it, and they're like knee-deep in mud in like 100-plus humidity, like just miserable.
Anything for the shot, right?
That's
what it comes down to.
That's what it's all about.
So yeah, $15 million to make this movie. Fox is behind it. It grossed $59 domestic and another $38 foreign, so bringing it to a total of $98 million worldwide, which adjusted is actually second, right?
The most successful.
Oh, the most, if you adjust for box office inflation, is the most successful Predator film in the franchise.
If you look at just the straight up numbers, Alien vs. Predator is more successful, but that was also 20 plus plus years.
Later. Yeah, right, right. So 1987, and I believe what that year, the only other big movie was Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah, it came out like a month beforehand.
Not and, the only other big
well,
movie,
right.
but the big rival film.
Right. It was yeah. the only R-rated movie that beat this movie, and also the only R-rated movie that opened higher than this movie.
Yeah.
It came out a month beforehand. It's a great movie. I get it. But again, this movie made almost 10 times its budget.
Yeah.
Almost. So and I wish they would have made another one with Arnold.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we have a graphic to throw up really quickly, which is the this is Schwarzenegger's top 10 grossing films, top 11 grossing films of all time here. Top 11 grossing films of all time here, adjusted for ticket price, because a lot of the big movies were back in the mid 80s, so it's unfair. So T2 for adjustment made $400 million, and this is just obviously domestic. This right. is not worldwide. But as you can see here, Predator is still, after inflation, his ninth highest grossing film of all time.
Yep. Which Kindergarten Cop made more money.
So did Twins.
Batman and Robin.
So did Twins.
Which goes to show you that he was on his way up when this movie came out.
Yeah,
he was
absolutely.
Like you said, he was on his way to becoming the greatest action hero of all time. Yeah. Then he gets into this point when he could make anything. You could make any movie with him and put it in there,
yeah.
and people would go watch it.
Well, as evidenced by Batman and Robin.
And Kindergarten Cop and yeah. Twins. Like, yeah. I mean, it was not a bad movie. But then even like True Lies. True yes. Lies is a great movie, great. And I can't wait till we do it on the show.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
One of my absolute favorites.
James Cameron, yeah.
But Predator...
Is a better
being
movie?
Being that... I don't know about better... But yeah, maybe. Maybe
like,
it is better.
I like it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting when you think that the last Olympia that he competed in was 75.
Mm-hmm.
And Pumping Iron chronicles that. So his earliest film work is the late 70s. It's movies like The Scavenger Hunt, Hercules in New York. These movies, Stay Hungry, I think, is one right. of them.
When Conan come out?
Early 80s. 80s, okay. 81, maybe.
81.
82 or something like that. You know, his breakthrough was Predator, obviously, and or not Predator. I was that was Terminator 1
yeah.
in 84. But I mean, when you really think about Schwarzenegger as a global brand, 87 is like the front end of him being a global brand.
Absolutely,
because Terminator 2 is 5 years later, or 4 years later, right? Like the movies that he made before this, for the most part, as we mentioned, are kind of throwaway action.
I mean,
largely.
Twins came out a year later.
Right.
And it made almost twice as much money.
Triplets is coming out.
Yeah. He's extremely... I mean, he just became extremely bankable. But that's kind of why... I mean, and I'll get to that later. But I think this is the greatest Schwarzenegger action hero role of all time.
Yeah.
Conan the Barbarian was pretty cool, too, when I was 3 or 4 years old. That was...
Right.
That was just like, what is...
What's the sweet line? Crush your enemies... There he goes. Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, experience the lamentation of the women.
That's nice.
That's the line from Conan.
I'm so glad you remember that.
Yeah, I just love it. I mean, I'm a huge Schwarzenegger fan. So let's talk Critical, yeah?
Critical's very interesting for this movie. Well, actually, it's not that interesting.
Yeah.
It's kind of exactly what you expect it to be. So, like always, we always pull from IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. And with our Rotten score, it was interesting because, you know, they have top critics, all critics, and they have the audience. And so with the audience, they gave it an 87. It makes perfect sense.
Okay.
This movie's awesome. It's a classic. Incredibly enjoyable. All critics gave it a 78%. Again, you're like, okay, I get it.
I could get that.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's good. And then you go to top critics, it's got a 40%.
Wow.
It's interesting that the all critics review of 78% is identical to the IMDb 7.8 that it got.
Absolutely.
Which I find that very interesting.
Oh, yeah, do you? I know you love the IMDb top 20.
I think it's great.
But we go through and you do a little more research. You find out that the reason it has 40% is because there's only 5 top critic reviews of it because it is so old.
Yeah.
3 of them, which are negative, 2 which are positive. So that makes the 40%. So that one, I feel like, is kind of nullified this week.
Yeah. So one of our fans at one point asked me why we only did 1981 and later films, and not to say that we couldn't at some point do films older. Like, I'm actually open to it. It's one
Absolutely.
Of those rules we could break.
Yeah.
But it gets difficult to put the movies in context with the movies we do now if you start to get much older than that. Even as far back as 81, like a movie like this from 87,
mm-hmm.
the box office totals, it's hard to
exactly,
compare
in
them.
In every sense. Box office, what they're doing now.
The way they were reviewed, the actors, what they're up to. It's mm-hmm. it's harder to slot them in. The best movies for our show, for the purposes of what we do, are the ones from like 95, 96, 97, 98. It gets a little bit more current in terms of what movies are doing now.
Absolutely.
Not to say we couldn't. It's just a little bit of an explanation. So you pulled some reviews here, it looks
like. Yeah, I pulled a couple of reviews. We'll start off with the negative one from Derek Adams, who did Time Out. And he said, with its stilted dialogue and hammy acting, the film has the look of an expensive production, but the feel of a B-movie, delivering a sort of undemanding monster mayhem Arnie's fans have come to expect.
Hmm.
Which, really?
And really? when did he write this, though?
That was probably written at the time it came out.
No, this was actually written in the early 2000s.
That's what I was saying. Really? It sounds like it's written in the early 2000s.
But
like,
almost all of the reviews that you find for this movie are written 2000 on.
I would like to know what Derek Adams thought in 1987.
Right.
When this came out, because I bet you if he was alive, yeah, exactly.
That's reflective of what I was talking about, right?
The
whole thing of like, there was a period of time where these kind of movies, these action movies, like in the mid-2000s, where they were still recent enough. Like, for instance, we did Con Air last week, 1997. Mm-hmm. If you were writing a review of Predator and it was 2001, you would be like, well, they're still making crappy action movies in 1997 that I saw recently that I remember. So this is just a precursor to those crappy action movies. Whereas years later, now we've swung back around and there's no budget. I'm going to drop my pen. I'll just hold it. Thank you. You swing back around and nowadays there's no budget for bad scripts. I mean, bad scripts. There's no budget to just make action movies. It's not like you just throw it. It's a franchise or it's not. Or it's straight to video or it's not. You don't get to just make $100 million movies just to make them if you want to. It's very rare that happens anymore. Yeah. So I think nowadays you go back and you look at the whole genre, the action movie genre, and it's harder to put a movie like Con Air and Predator next to each other and actually call them the same quality, the same genre, because they're both action movies.
Well, the thing about this too is that, like, I don't consider us movie critics, but we love movies and we are kind of critics. We really are.
We're critics.
We are.
Yeah.
But it's not in this sense.
Sure.
But I feel it's so. They do themselves a disservice by giving reviews like this.
Yeah,
you know, we found this out when we did the Rambo 2 episode, Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yeah,
you know, when JT and Finstock were on here, and you and I both got swayed about halfway through the episode, and it changed our opinion of Rambo completely.
Completely.
For the better or for the worse?
For the better, because we came into it like, this is campy, this is stupid, this is hard to watch, like the actions, blah, 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 blah. But then you go through and you actually pay respect to the shots and the things that they do and the way they set things up and the era that it came out.
Oh, yeah, that was another one, jeez.
Absolutely, and you have to respect these movies. So if you're writing this review in 2000+, and you're sitting there like, oh, well, look at the action, look at the grittiness of the film, and look at, it's campy, like, no, dude. It's 25 years old is what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it really is.
And it's still sweet.
And it's still completely badass.
Yeah.
And so by the other reviews, we got, you know, Douglas Pratt, excuse me, with The Hollywood Reporter. He goes, it's so lean, so exciting, and so imaginative that you can watch it every month or two, year in and year out, and never get tired of it.
That's how I feel about
That's
it.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I took a good 15 years off of seeing this, and I recently watched it, and that's true.
Right.
I feel that's completely true. I'm glad I took the time off, but yeah, this movie was pretty solid. Just
We talked to, because originally the show this week was just gonna be me and Bateman, and we talked to Jason. We're like, dude, you should come on the show. You know, you got your comic thing. We know you love the movie. And you're like, I don't know. I think I have to work. So he goes home and he watches the movie. He's like, I'm doing the show.
Yeah.
I'm coming on the show, and I'm
to do Predator. Right. So I mean, Blake Howard from TUE, that movie show, says it's the perfect blend of explosive machismo and thrills, where the setting is almost as ominous and terrifying as the extraterrestrial villain. That is great to me.
Yeah.
Because the Predator is frightening. The fact that they're in the sticks like that, they're out in the jungle by themselves, is frightening.
They can't get picked up.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a war zone. Like, it is. It's a perfect environment.
So speaking of the war zone, let's talk Ultimate Action Scene. You know, now, guys, when we started the show, we used to do something where we would really focus on the production of a couple specific scenes. And we would say, you know, this is what we think is the Ultimate Action Scene and how is this made, blah, 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 blah. It's something we do less of now. It's more like a discussion of what is the Ultimate Action Scene.
Right.
And in this film, it's hard to say, and I want to know what you guys think, because I know that there's the scene in the village. There's there's the fight with its tons of explosions. It's very reminiscent of like First Blood Part 2.
Right.
There's the scene where
the team starts to get picked off.
Yeah, and the big sort of battle where Mac goes nuts.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah and he's
he
like,
totally loses it.
I'm going to have some fun.
Bill Duke is great.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
So I have some fun.
And then the third one.
Which is like basically Schwarzenegger covering himself in mud and getting ready to take on the Predator. And then just that whole fight, him weaving through the jungle with the spear.
Right.
And it's hard to know, like, what... From an old school action standpoint, if we were doing this in 1987, of course we would choose the village explosion.
Right. So that's the thing, is that you look at this and we have it's like the three categories of what makes an action movie scene.
Yeah.
So Jason here thinks that the ultimate action scene is the village, right?
Well, yeah, because with that ultimate action scene as you guys are posing, I'm thinking the amount of explosions and, you know, the guys diving out of a thatched hut when two, you know, grenade launchers just launched two grenade, you know, huge bombs. It's just kind of funny. Like, you won't be diving out. You will just be incinerated. But, yeah, this is what I thought was quintessential ultimate action.
You get the camera walk up with a gun behind Arnold and he pops him in the face, I mean, you know.
They launch some grenades in these, again, thatched houses and huts and stuff, and then they shoot on top of
it, you know?
It's nonstop. So
a limitless amount of ammo.
Yeah.
Land, you're bleeding. I ain't got time to bleed.
Got time to bleed.
Okay.
Yeah, and
you
then
got time to duck. Love that guy. I just love this whole movie so much.
It's one of the most quotable movies.
Yeah.
And then you go into the second one, which is the one that I kind of feel like is the ultimate action scene, but then you think about it, and it's kind of like that moment in horror movies.
Yeah.
The first person has died. Now you're being hunted.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a horror movie action scene. People start getting picked off in grisly ways. You see their bodies. You see their entrails. Like you said, you get Bill Duke going nuts. You get everyone going nuts. Like, yeah. You get Billy is just like, I'm ripping off my shirt, dropping my gun, and I'm going to go hand-to-hand with this dude out in the forest.
It was definitely a cool scene when Dutch also realized, you know, he's using the trees, you know? Yeah. And the way they shot it, they kind of come back from him, and he's just kind of like... You know, wheels are turning.
Right,
and
you think like, his wow. Or you think his weapon. Like, yeah,
he's so sweet. And then we go into the third one.
Yeah, well, I was going to say one of the scenes in the village scene that I forgot that I think is so sweet is, like, clearly they were we need a moment to show just how strong Schwarzenegger is. So let's have him lift this car.
Yeah.
Let's just have him just, like, strain and just be like, exactly. Just, like, lift a car.
Completely. So, yeah, that's why I love that. I think that scene's great.
Like, Ferrigno does that in Pumping Iron. They show him, like, lift a car. But, I mean... It's just absurd. Like,
what's he doing?
Yeah. What the hell is he doing? It's showtime. Yeah. It's amazing. I think it's got to be for me the covering himself in mud, setting the traps, all his like Boy Scout traps for the Predator, and going at him, and he realizes that he can't see me. And I love the exposition where it shows the Predator can't see him, like it shows his eye view, and then Schwarzenegger's like, he can't see me.
Like, he looks right at him and he kills like a mouse. It's like, he can't see me. You're like, yeah, no shit.
You made a great point, actually, when we talked about that a little bit, right? Because we talked about the scene in the jungle where they just start unloading, right? Not a thing. Not a fucking thing.
Yeah. Well, they got him once, right? Somebody got him.
Clip is like, I hate how the chick, like, she's like got the alien blood on her. She sees it on the thing and she's just like,
Yeah,
and then later on they talk about it. She's like, "It's bleeding."
Yeah.
Like, what about green blood? Yeah. What about neon green blood?
I made notes about her, and I said she's keen to blood.
Yeah.
Great side boob.
Yeah.
And she doesn't die.
Yeah.
She doesn't die.
No, but your point about they unload, they spend all their ammo. They literally unload the minigun on the jungle, and you're like, that's kind of stupid. But right, what was it you said?
But then later on, when Arnold and the alien and Predator are fighting. He Arnold swings across. I think he's holding on to one of the other trees, and then the Predator goes down, and he throws like the spear and blows the thing up.
Yeah,
the Predator turns around and just starts unloading.
Yeah,
it's actually to me, I was like, that's the opposite scene.
Same thing,
which was amazing, which was kind of cool. Like,
that is great. That's a very good. Yeah, I like that a lot.
I thought that was cool. So. I do want to get into favorite line. So, guys, again, if you're watching, if you want to tweet at any of us live, you're welcome to. I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
I am at Andrew Guy on Twitter.
If you want to comment on Jason's Starlight Tavern Instagram during the show, you're welcome to.
Yeah.
Or leave comments. But we want to know what you guys think here as well. We're gonna go into favorite line, hero villain ranking, recast. This is the most interactive part of the show. So let's get into favorite line. This is one that's going to be very hard to decide. I've been quoting this movie for 20 years, and as I said, most of my favorite lines are like the unintentional ones where Schwarzenegger just says something.
It's just like you said,
it's the confidence behind the liver that makes it so funny to me. You have all the classics, right? Like, I ain't got time to bleed, and Dylan, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, but what do you guys think? What stands out to you? What's like, if you had to choose one, maybe two at the most?
You ugly motherfucker.
Yeah.
Is by far, like, I mean, and everybody, I think, working on the thing.
Yeah, knows
that one. Get to the chopper. And then, sorry, so this is three, but if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah.
So I
do it. Kill me. I'm here.
Yeah.
Do it. Get through the chopper. Go.
Whoever does the Arnold voice always does those two.
You always have to do them.
Classics.
But then you forget, like, stick around. Like, it's pretty funny.
That's what I'm saying. There's like 50 quotables in the movie.
Almost everything he says is quotable. So I have a couple. I actually have like 10.
I know.
One of my favorites is,
You're ghosting us, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are back in the world. You give away our position one more time.
Great.
I'll bleed you real quiet. Leave you here.
And Weathers, and Weathers goes, yeah. Love it.
And then the other one that I really like is, you're not scared of no man. He goes, there's something out there waiting for us, and it ain't no man. We're all gonna die.
Yeah, that's incredible. So incredible. Good. So many, yeah. So those are fantastic lines. Like, for me, the one that my buddy Zeke and I used to quote all the time is when he finds Jim Hopper and he picks up the tags and he's like, Jim, he's like, Jim Hopper. And then he walks over and he's like, Dylan, come here. And he's like, I knew this man. Green Berets, the fourth brag. What the hell are they doing here? That's one of my favorite lines of the whole movie. I love it. Like that's really great.
Just the Green Berets, the fourth brag.
Yeah, Green
just,
Berets,
like, just that one, like, three words is just incredible.
That one, and then also when he's like, he finds out that Dylan set him up, he's like, you set us up! And he goes, he's like, what's he say to him? He says something about
assets,
like,
assets, the expendable assets.
No, because he's like, he's like, and you knew, he's like, so why my team? And he's like, because I needed someone who could get the job done. And he goes, so you cooked up a story and threw the six of us into a meat grinder. What happened to you, Dylan? You used to be somebody I could trust. And he goes, I woke up. Why don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, just incredible. Great. Like, those are my favorites.
Their interaction is phenomenal.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. So, like, those are, I mean, there's a million, as we said.
I do have one more honorable mention that I gotta say, and that's when they realize that they just unloaded all the rounds from the minigun and everything. He goes, no blood, no bodies, not a fucking trace. We hit nothing. Yeah, he drags out the end of that. It's so good.
The chick doesn't get that much airtime too, but she did have a cool one. I did write it was she speaks in Spanish and then she says, you know, in English, it means the demon who make trophies of men.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, that's pretty cool, you know, for.
I also think Jesse Ventura.
Side dude.
So, son of a bitch is dug in like an Alabama tick. He's got some real good lines. I mean, just that's so he can literally quote the entire movie. The whole thing's good.
You can sit here and do
like,
this forever.
Where's the one with, like, the broke dick dog?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can't remember that one either.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Funny thing about. I totally just remember this. Funny thing about Billy, Sonny Landham, the actor. The insurance company for the film insisted that they hire bodyguards for him.
Oh, because he was a troublemaker, right?
Yeah, it wasn't
a bar fight guy.
He wasn't a detective. Yeah. It was because he would always get wasted and try to fight other actors.
Who was this?
Billy.
Billy.
Interesting.
Yeah, or he'd just get upset on set and he'd get in fights.
But he is Native American, right?
Yeah, he's the calm one.
Yeah, but...
I can't believe Jim Hopper walked into an ambush. I don't believe you did, General.
Yeah, it's great.
Not to offend any Native Americans out there who
are
we'll
drunk. Just move on.
Really incredible. Let's talk about hero villain ranking. So this is where we kind of talk, and this is a tough one, guys. Yeah. I know we promise this every single week, and we don't do it, but we have a list at home, and we just need to make a graphic out of it so we can throw it up here for you. But you know, where would you rank the hero and the villain on the all time hero villain action movie list?
Right.
I have a very strong opinion about this one.
I know you do, so I think that you should start off.
I believe that Dutch is one of the three greatest action heroes of all time. I know that's extreme. I know it's bold, but
we haven't ever touched the top three.
No, I think Rambo for both of us was like somewhere in the top five. Yeah. Dutch to me is the best action character that Schwarzenegger ever played. It's perfect for him.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think like he and Tom Cruise are the greatest action stars ever. So basically, like, it's just I can't think of almost anyone I would put ahead of Dutch.
So you take Dutch over T2. Or, I mean, T-800 and T2.
Yeah. I think for me, that was like, I want to have a list in front, but I want to say that's like 8th or 9th.
Right.
Somewhere right in there. I mean, it's fantastic. I just Dutch is just the best. He's my favorite.
He's great.
He beats the Predator.
He beats the Predator.
And then
the T-800 beats the T-1000. Indestructible machine.
I mean, we're talking top 10 all-timers.
I know.
And then the Predator for me, the Predator is a top 10 action film.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
For me, I would totally agree with that. I'll talk about Dutch in a second, but I do agree that the Predator's top 10.
Any live chat comments for us?
Not yet about this, but come on guys.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you think?
But yeah, so I'd say Predator top 10. Dutch, top 15.
Top blasphemy.
I know.
Blasphemy.
Or maybe 10th.
Sure.
So you think this is Arnold's greatest role of all time?
It's his greatest action hero role. That's what I'm saying. In terms of action heroes, like for instance, what if I liked him better in True Lies?
Well, yeah,
it wouldn't matter because this is he's awesome in True Lies.
Right.
But in this movie, he's a
Dutch, the character.
Fucking commando.
He
is everything that he was supposed to be in the movie Commando, right. But he's not corny or stupid.
Yeah.
He's just awesome.
Yeah.
Like he's there's no other Schwarzenegger role where I believe him more as a stone cold badass. Like, it's just, if you were,
I mean, again, sorry, but Conan, he was, he's,
you put up Dutch against any of the other characters and I believe he'd be like tougher, he'd be smarter, he'd be more cool. That's just what I think. So Dutch is top three for me.
I got a he's fifth here.
That's strong. So that's, I mean, good. Strong. Again, I consider fifth.
I'd say top ten.
You'd say top ten.
I've got a problem though with the Predator.
Sure.
Oh yeah, you know, you made it. This is a very valid point. I like
now,
this a lot.
Now the Predator is badass.
Yeah.
But to me, it seemed like a young Predator. He maybe came there. They told him you need to bring seven skulls back, and when he picks up Arnold and he, you know, checks out his skull, and he's pretty much like, this is like the ultimate guy that I need to bring back. You know, then takes everything off and like, all right, let's no more like me blasting you. Let's kind of fight. But you know, he's cloaked the whole time before this. And so I'm not saying that's, you know, comp it out, but like he's always cloaked. He's hitting you from long, you know, long ways away. And then he does beat the crap out of Arnold, but he's Arnold leading him to the trap.
Yeah.
And then it does happen.
He gets
happen.
Picked up in the net.
When he picks up in the net, he screams like a little bitch, which is hilarious. Yeah. I watched it twice and he really upset. Does. Like and it's funny, the subtitles are like Predator screeches.
Yeah.
You know, and it's
exactly.
Like, okay. And so yeah, then he gets hit by the tree trunk and then he just blows himself up like a suicide. Yeah. Like it's like,
yeah.
So to
he's
me,
pure like, evil.
Yeah, I mean, he did take them out one by one. And some of them you didn't even see how he killed them, like Billy and stuff. You didn't see how, but so I just don't think, like, you know, like he's top 10. I'd say
right
top 20.
You know what? I just got swayed by someone on here. I think it was it Brian? Brian, was it you again? Damn it, man! It was Brian. So he wrote the T-800 is a robot that is supposed to be that displays a man.
Yeah,
Dutch is a man. That kills a super alien with incredibly sophisticated technology.
I agree, Ryan.
I agree too. I digress. So yes, I swap it. I switch it.
So you put
Dutch ahead of the T-800.
So he's like eighth or ninth for you, maybe.
Yeah, because he's still killing in Terminator. It's like a Terminator against a Terminator.
Right.
This is a man against an alien, a super alien.
You're my boy, Hurst.
Damn it, Hurst.
I see now why you cry.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And I'll mention it one more time. You guys should all look up the Terminator 2 trailer recut, the one where it's like, he was a gay Terminator. It's very funny.
Yes.
Anyway, so let's talk about the last couple categories. So did we all say our Predator ranking?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, let's get into our recast.
Yeah, so there's a lot here. So I'm going to just, for the sake of not taking like 35 minutes to do our recasts here, because all of us were supposed to recast five roles this time.
Right.
And I would have almost done all seven because I liked the whole team so much, but we skipped Hawkins and the other white guy. Not a fucking thing. That guy whose name I can never remember the character of.
Can't remember his name either.
But we are going to be recasting Schwarzenegger, Weathers, Billy, Bill Duke, and
Ventura.
And Ventura.
Yeah.
So Billy, Blaine, Mac, Dutch, and Dylan. And I'm just going to have each of us. This is how it's going to work. You're going to get to explain it.
I recast the chick too.
Well, you can throw it as an Easter egg if you want.
Yeah.
You're going to get to explain it. 5-10 seconds of explaining why. We're all going to nod, disagree, and then move on. Otherwise, it's going to take us forever because it's 15 recasts right now.
Right.
So let's start with, we'll go from back to front. Let's all start with our Billy recast.
Billy, I went with, and I know he's too damn short, Billy, or Tony Jaa.
He's like 5'7".
He's 5'6".
He can't play him.
He can play him. He's shredded. He could fight. He's the type of guy, just like Billy, that would go at the end of the movie and be like, fuck this. I'm dropping my gun. I'm going to go hand to hand with this guy and then get my spine ripped out.
I mean, I like the intensity. He's too small. Spiritually,
you're too small.
Adam Beach, he's just a quintessential Native American actor who's pretty badass.
What would I know him from?
I can't think of right off the bat. But you put him in, you'll see that picture.
Fair
you'll
enough.
Be like, yeah.
I went with Jason Momoa, who is soon going to be playing Aquaman, and he played Khal Drogo in Game of Thrones. I think he's not really Native American necessarily.
No, but he can play that.
I was going to pick him. I just didn't.
He seems, I think you used him once before.
Oh, Jason B. It's so funny. I actually thought about this guy. It's the guy from like Wind Talkers.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he can do it.
I just thought he's kind of old now. Okay, maybe not.
All right, let's move on. Jesse Ventura. Blaine. Sparich, who do you got?
Blaine. Tom Hardy, actually, because I could see...
We use Tom Hardy on the show every week.
Yeah, to... It's my first time.
Exactly.
I just think he could be a good... He could beef up and be psycho.
Could be a badass.
Totally. Yeah. I think he'd be great in that role. I didn't use him because I try to avoid him because I use him every week. I had two, but I'm going to stick with Kurt Angle. He was Koba.
Koba.
Nice.
The great Koba.
He's nice. Massive. He's bald. He's jacked. He's crazy.
That's a good one.
It's perfect.
Yeah. He doesn't have to say much either.
No, which is not perfect. At all.
I went with another character from the movie Warrior, which everybody knows we love so much. I went with Frank Grillo, who is the... Frank Campana. Very unorthodox trainer.
Turn your hips up and in! Nice.
He's also in Captain America Winter Soldier. He's Kingdom. A badass.
Kingdom's a cool MMA show.
He's a badass, and great. He's like physically intimidating, and I met him semi-recently, and he made a very vulgar comment to me, which, not in a negative way, just it was a vulgar, extremely vulgar comment that was like, this guy could do it.
Yeah.
He could be like the kind of like, if they cast him as a racist guy, shave your head. Like,
You know, and it's racist, sexist.
It is very important, and I know this is taking longer than my 10 seconds, but when thinking about recasting, we often consider, like, do you stick with their race or age? Can you shift it? Mm-hmm. Usually age is pretty important, but sometimes, you know, black guy be white, Native American guy be Asian, whatever. Like, and it only is relevant if it has something to do with the character. Originally, I was thinking that Bill Duke and Jesse Ventura didn't need to be... They could be shifted.
Right.
But the more I thought about it, the more I was like, here's this southern, white, kind of racist, probably...
He's a racist, bigot, sexist. Yeah.
And then here's this super intense black dude, right? And I was like, you could shift it around. But then I was like, no, not. Because they're best friends.
Right.
They're comrades.
When Ventura dies, Duke loses it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They have complete respect for one another, even though he's a complete racist. And he is a very,
very... Yeah, so you kind of have to stick with the...
Yeah, you got to stick with that.
Yeah, so I think it's important. So I think Grillo, and obviously when I get to mine. So what do you have for Mac? What do you have for Bill Duke? What do you got, Jason?
Jimon
Hansu.
I went with the same.
Yeah, you guys both went Jimon Hansu.
I mean, he just could play. I could see him go crazy.
Yeah,
he's got intense eyes.
Yeah,
and I think he could. I agree. The one I went with this is, I was like, this is a guy who doesn't need to say much, but you need to be intimidated by him when you see him if he wants to look intense, and this guy can do that.
Yeah.
I went with Terry Crews.
You think Terry Crews?
Oh, yes. I don't care what you say.
He's jacked.
He can play it. He can do it. Because, I know he's always... Like, he's one of the best comedic actors, for what he does.
Uh-huh.
I bet you he could play crazy serious in this movie.
Maybe,
Because he's only in, like... I mean, that's not true. Bill Duke's actually a pretty large part of this movie. I think Terry Crews could pull it off.
Fair enough. I'm not gonna sit here and argue with you.
I want to throw it out there.
Yes.
Lance Reddick.
Oh, love Lance Reddick.
Oh, that's good.
Daniels.
That is very good.
Daniels from The Wire.
Yep.
Reddick could do it. He's intense. Cheekbones.
Yeah. Let's get to Dylan.
Dylan.
I
needed someone who could get the job done.
I want you to go, and then I want Jason to go, because I wanted to use the one that Jason used, and I just couldn't think of it.
I went with a pretty interesting one, I think, and it's not one where I feel like he matches the character that well, but in my mind, I was like, if I was going to remake this movie, I would make it deadly serious, and I would want my guy who's playing Dylan to be iconic and recognizable, just like Carl Weathers was, but in this way that seeing him play kind of a weasel is good. Like, Weathers playing a weasel was, like,
it's perfect.
Surprising.
Yeah.
You know, because he was pretty honorable as Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
So I went with Will Smith. I think seeing Will Smith being kind of a shit weasel would be awesome.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. I just don't like it. I just don't like Will Smith.
I mean, neither do I, but he's a big dude. He could get jacked.
Yeah.
He needs to rival whoever your Dutch is.
I mean, Jackness. Mine's not great, so I got no room to talk. I have Omar Epps.
Really?
Yeah.
It's not very
Omar
good.
Epps. Huh?
It's not Epps. No, I let a lot of your really bad recast slide by. You're like the worst at the recast.
And I think Omar, I'm pretty Epps, good at it. Actually,
I think he's terrible. Audience, why don't you tell me what you guys think? Tell me what you think about that,
Jason. I think you have the best.
He does.
Idris Elba.
Yep.
I mean, he just he's such a great actor that he can. I think he would just
love
be phenomenal.
It's perfect.
Role.
That is the best recast
I consider
for
it.
This role.
I still like Will Smith more. Who'd you guys cast as Dutch?
I think I went with another one that you guys probably always use, but which was Dwayne Johnson, just because it would be amazing to see a Predator pick up Dwayne Johnson by his neck.
He's basically, especially now in his career, because of how jacked he is.
He's Arnold.
He's the most quintessential action star for if you want an action character. My only hesitation for using him, and I thought about it very carefully.
His acting is not there yet? Or?
No. Actually, it's like not Schwarzenegger was ever a great actor. It was like, it was more like...
You bite your tongue.
I would want someone who could really sell intensity and a little more dramatic intensity in, mm-hmm. in this movie if I was going to try to make it as serious as I'd want to see it made nowadays.
Southland Tales, he was really good in that.
Like, I love The Rock. Huge fan. So I'm going to jump in. I'll give my response. I went with Hugh Jackman. And he's 6'3". He's jacked out of his mind. We've all seen how muscular that guy can get. I think he could put the size on to match Schwarzenegger if he needed to. And more than anything, that thing that he does when he gets crazy in movies, where he's like, no! And he's like, goes kind of... Like, I feel like seeing that in the jungle against the Predator, I'd be really in on that.
Yeah, no, he's got a very good... he's got a very good crazy man.
Yeah.
I went with Hemsworth.
Chris.
He's big. He's massive. He is... He's got an accent. I think he'd be a good Dutch.
He could do it.
Absolutely, he could do it. If you think Will Smith could play Dylan, then Chris Hemsworth could definitely play Dutch.
Look, there's artistic choices.
Let's move on!
Oh, and I recast the chick to Alice Braga.
Who's that?
Braga. She was in... Braga. She was in I Am Legend with
Will
Smith.
Oh, yeah, okay. She was opposite the fantastic actor Will Smith.
Somebody said Batista. Jesse Batista, is that his? The man with the iron fist.
Okay.
He was in for Ventura, and I did think about that.
Solid.
I think it'd be good. But let's move on. Let's keep going.
It is hilarious to imagine if Cage or Cruz had played... this is Cage versus Cruz, guys. Section where we, for about 8 seconds, talk about what would happen if Nick Cage or Tom Cruise was to play the main character in this film.
Right.
Seeing Tom Cruise against a Predator, he's like 3.5 feet
shorter.
You
would get ripped in half.
That wouldn't work.
No.
I also... He couldn't pull it off. No. I mean, I love Cruise to death, but like, he couldn't pull this off.
Neither of these guys. You have... Like,
I can't see
the
Cage
one thing that Arnold said about this movie and why he thinks it's so successful is because this ensemble cast was just massive jack dudes.
Bodybuilders.
Exactly.
Cast
essentially.
Of bodybuilders and future politicians.
Cage
taken
and Cruise.
Out one by one. I mean, it's really cool.
It's
awesome. I mean, Cage and Cruise could be one of the two white guys, like Hawkins or the other guy whose name I can't remember, but... That's about it.
Yeah, it just wouldn't work. So it's not applicable. We can talk Cruise or KJ accents all we want, but we do enough of that on this show.
Yes, we do.
So finally, we get into the last category here, guys, and this is which of the three action movie categories does this movie fit into? Now, I think this one will be very interesting. The three categories we discuss are totally legitimate. These are movies that stand on their own as dramatic pieces that are very high quality and don't feel like you're having to explain them as action movies. They're just great movies that happen to be action movies.
Right.
Die Hard, The Fugitive. You have totally ridiculous movies that kind of just fall off a cliff, make you laugh. It feels almost like they're a parody at times of themselves. Con Air, Face Off.
Right.
And then you have ridiculously legitimate, which is the middle category. This is the sort of zenith of the action movie category. It's movies that are campy but engaging the whole time. They feel awesome and intense, but they feel a little bit tongue-in-cheek sometimes. And generally speaking, there's at least one performance sort of hidden in the movie that is... A bit.
What's an example of
the totally legitimate?
The Rock,
no, ridiculously legitimate.
The Rock,
The Rock,
Point Break, Speed. These are movies that, they're almost legit. They're kind of in the middle. And
Popcorn Talk just said Ronda Rousey is Dutch? Question mark.
I really, really believe strongly that this movie is totally legitimate, even though it's campy at moments. I think it's totally legit.
I'm going to debate you on that, and the reason is because when I was watching this, I was like, oh yeah, it's totally legit, definitely. When you watch The Rock, it's an incredibly quotable movie.
Yep.
But they're mostly badass, epic quotes from Ed Harris. There's a few jokey ones from Sean Connery and Nick Cage.
Yeah.
This whole movie, every single thing we've quoted,
silly.
We all laugh after we quote it. Every single one. This movie is not totally legitimate. I thought it was, because it is very believable. The whole situation and them fighting the Predator and the battle, it is. But when you go back and you actually look at this movie from that point, where every single thing that we've quoted for the last 72 minutes, we've all laughed at.
This is like my argument for Con Air, basically.
Exactly.
You're reversing it on me.
Exactly. And it's 100% true, man, because this movie is not totally legitimate. It's ridiculously legitimate.
Yeah,
I
second that.
Yeah.
I think it's ridiculously legitimate.
It's so good, but it's because, stick around, Dylan, you son of a bitch, Green Berets, I know, every line, every single line.
You swayed me.
Yes!
It's ridiculously legit.
Mike Epps!
Middle category. No, I hate it. It means that there's another movie in the middle category now that we have to has to fight for relevance.
Yeah.
That middle category is so friggin' packed.
It's perfect.
Everyone that you're doing is always...
That's where you want them to end up.
Yeah.
Because they're the best. But I mean, like, the legit category, like Terminator 2's ended up over there. Mm-hmm. Mission Impossible 3 has ended up over there. Like, it's... Anyway... You're right. You guys are dead on. It's close for me, and it's because of all those moments of the dramatic moments and the terrifying moments that I want to put it in.
Right.
But those are what makes it ridiculously legit.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of the quality that balances out the humor.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. Fair enough. Tell us what you guys think. So thank you for stopping by for another episode of Action Movie Anatomy, the Predator edition. Thank you, Jason Sperich, for coming by and hanging out with us. Now, Jason does a comic book. He does a web comic that is now in print.
Correct. We did a print for... I went recently to Boston Comic Con where my buddy I write it with. He lives in... We printed it out, but that's not what we really... We actually started Indiegogo to make a bigger version of it.
Nice.
Okay. Why don't you give the audience like a quick breakdown of what it's about?
It's pretty much Cheers in Space. My co-writer, Bob Sally, writes a really cool sci-fi comic called Salvagers.
Okay.
And because it's independent, it took him like 4 months at a time to do each issue. And he's like, I wanted people to still like this sci-fi kind of genre, so why don't we make a comedy kind of version of it and... put a bar in space, and the Predator actually shows up in the second one.
Nice. Love it.
And so, yes, we just throw in Kirk and all these cool characters. It's just a one-off, and it's a free webcomic at starlighttavern.com. We've got a Facebook page. I just started an Instagram.
What's the Instagram?
It's starlight_tavern.
Okay.
And it's just fun to write. Juan Cali is our artist, who is amazing. He lives in Colombia.
Yeah,
and
the artist is phenomenal. He's
amazing. Our colorist is Don Matias, and he does his own con Penizzles, his own little comic. But it was cool for Boston Comic Con because all three of us were there: the writer, the colorist, and myself. Juan lives in Colombia. He couldn't make it, but such a cool experience. And we're just trying to
ramp it up
every Wednesday. We do it. So we just did one right now. It's really fun.
Awesome. Well, it's very high quality, and I know you're working on some other stuff too.
It's very funny. It's very enjoyable.
Yeah, I always get a crack out of it. It's a newspaper comic, essentially. It's one page that's beautifully done, like, as you said, Cheers in Space. It's playing on classic sci-fi genres and throwing them into a newspaper
comic. And being a webcomic, it's for free, you know? But the thing is, like, with this Indiegogo, we're trying to... Some people like physical copies, and I love it. Like, when we printed out this little small print for Boston Comic Con, it was... So well received, and just even myself, I was like, wow, yeah,
I'm awesome.
Awesome. Check it out, guys, starlighttavern.com, please.
And Drew, if the people want to find you, where can they find you?
You can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter. Please get at me about the show. Anything you'd like to talk about, I'm always there.
You guys can find me at Ben Bateman Media. Please feel free to check out some of the other shows on Popcorn Talk. Anatomy of a Movie is the regular dramatic sort of appraisal of films that aren't action-based that comes out every single week. You can check that out. I believe those come out on Fridays.
Yep.
And those are great, as well as the fact that we have Popcorn Talk Action Movie Anatomy mugs coming that we will be giving away as contests. The first step to doing that is review us on iTunes. If you're listening to this, you go in and you leave us a review on iTunes. We put a bunch of complicated stipulations out there last week. We will update those. Start by reviewing us on iTunes and we'll talk.
That's right.
We want to give some mugs away, guys, so please get on that with us. And otherwise, we will see you next week.
Thanks for stopping by.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.